You're listening to Yoga Crush, the podcast that offers chakra-spinning insights and winning strategies from inspiring yogis who've managed to create a thriving and crush-worthy yoga career. Here to help guide you on your yoga journey, your host and fellow yogipreneur, Suzanne Moskovich. You ready to flow?
Welcome, yogis. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Suzanne, and I am super excited about today's episode. If you happen to be tuning in while you're on the go, not to worry. We have all the show notes and links shared from today's episode available for you over on our website, yogacrush.co/podcast. Just select this episode and dive in. If you're new to Yoga Crush or you haven't yet picked up your free guide, I encourage you to do so. It is called The Four Pillars of a Thriving and Sustainable Yoga Career, and I've outlined a four-pillar foundation shared by the world's most successful, impactful, and financially thriving yoga teachers. I promise you this will propel you forward in your yoga career and allow you to get the most out of these podcast episodes. To get your copy, visit our website, yogacrush.co, and sign up. So easy, and it's free. What more can you ask for? All right, let's dive into today's show. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Karina Raisman. Karina is a Montreal-based yoga teacher and yoga therapist with over a decade of teaching experience. She is the founder and visionary of Resource Yoga, Montreal's premier school for yoga therapeutics. She has trained over 100 yoga therapists and maintains a busy private clinic where she offers one-on-one yoga therapy sessions to her clients. With a degree in microbiology and immunology, Karina devotes her time to bridging the gap between modern medicine and yoga therapy and integrates aspects of anatomy, physiology, and immunology to the teaching of yoga. Through research and collaboration, she aims to integrate yoga into the public health system, making the healing aspects of the practice accessible to everyone. Let's get to the show. Karina, thank you so much for joining us. You and I have had multiple conversations over the past 2 years, I believe, that have really exposed me to many, many truths that have propelled me forward in both my personal and my professional development. So I'm really excited for you to share some of those insights with our listeners today.
It'd be my pleasure to.
So to begin, I want you to imagine you're at a networking cocktail with a room full of business executives, busy CEOs, none of whom have ever practiced yoga or meditation before. Without using the terms yoga teacher or yoga therapist, and in 30 seconds or less, explain to us what it is that you do.
Teach people how to establish and maintain optimal health.
I love that. And would you say that that serves as an accurate definition for yoga therapy itself?
In my approach, I'd say that's a good way to simplify it, definitely.
So for those of us who are wondering, what is yoga therapy? Because I know a lot of people consider yoga to be by default therapeutic. How would you explain it to them?
I agree that yoga is by default therapeutic. A lot of the time, the way that it's taught or the way that it's practiced doesn't meet the needs or the requirements for it to be therapeutic. And that's really what we look at in my approach to yoga therapy, is really understanding what makes a practice therapeutic and how can we adjust it, whether we break down the exercises or adjust the rhythm or a specific tool or technique that will enhance the well-being of the practitioner.
And I think that that's in some way what you're known for, is being able to take yoga off the mat and present it in a really practical and pragmatic manner that's completely backed by science. Is that what you say is your specialty?
Yes, that is my specialties.
You've sort of attracted what I would say both yogis and non-yogis alike in that approach. You've managed to run a very successful private practice focusing on yoga therapy for stress management, where you're working almost exclusively with beginner students. And then you've also run an equally successful teacher training, which is attracting a wide spectrum of yoga and health professionals. And this is fascinating to me because you've essentially captured the interest of, like I said, yogis and quote-unquote non-yogis. So before we delve into what that looks like in you having created this community for yoga therapy, I'm curious to hear about how you went from studying microbiology and immunology, pursuing a career in medicine, to becoming a full-time yogi. So take us back in time. Explain to us how this transition came to be.
Mm-hmm. During my entire academic history, I was interested in health sciences and especially in the sciences. And when it was time to decide what to study, one of my overriding questions about health was, what would provide 100% efficiency to our body, to our organism? And so looking into immunology, which is the body's defense system, I figured that would be a really good way to understand how the body maintains its health. And so I went into microbiology and immunology with these questions of what is necessary for an organism, a human organism, to be healthy. And throughout the academic process, of course, I've learned a lot of science fact. Where I didn't feel very satisfied was in the approach to health. And as a matter of fact, there's not so much emphasis on health, ironically, in the program. There's a lot of emphasis on disease and what disease is and how to treat it, mainly by pharmaceuticals and surgery. And there's less emphasis on how to establish health, how to maintain health, ironically speaking. Being dissatisfied with the values of the medical system in terms of health and the approach to health, I was exploring other practices like yoga, like dance, like sport. And I quickly realized that a lot of the questions I was looking for in my med program, I was finding in yoga. And a lot of the theory, a lot of the philosophy, and a lot of the practice corresponds from the acute phase to the chronic phase, so from the short term to the long term, from the symptomatic to the entire holistic experience of health, yoga provides the tools in theory, in understanding, in application, in practice, better than any other system that I've discovered so far. And I'm still learning today.
Yeah, I think when it comes to anyone's yoga practice, it's like the more you learn, the less you know type
exactly.
of thing. Yeah.
The more you learn, the more you want to learn.
Yeah, for sure. So you were already practicing yoga at the time that you were studying in med school. Is that correct?
I was.
Okay. And so were you involved in yoga teacher training at that time? Or at what point did you decide to take your first yoga teacher training?
I was practicing yoga. I hadn't done my teacher training at the time. And while I was at McGill, I had no idea that yoga was therapeutic. I had no idea that yoga would be the path that I would take as a complement to what I was learning at the time. At the time, yoga was a sport like all the other sports that I was doing. However, it was a sport in its own unique category. Nothing quite could compare to my yoga practice. And after I had finished my degree in microbiology and immunology, I was prepared to travel, and I decided to do my yoga teacher training as a great way to travel and teach at the same time.
I guess those were the first steps you took in pursuing a career in yoga was, I'm going to travel and use this as my means of travel.
Exactly.
By teaching?
Exactly.
Interesting. And so where did that take you?
To Spain.
Oh. And how did you seek out opportunities in Spain to teach?
Going around to the different yoga studios and doing a lot of karma yoga to begin, and then just becoming part of the community and bit by bit just becoming a sub teacher and then having a place in the schedule and starting my own classes and workshops, and one thing led to the next.
And you were doing this all in Spain, or were you traveling to other places as well?
Mainly in Spain.
Okay. And then How did you then bring it back here to Montreal? What happened in terms of establishing a career in your home base of Montreal?
I really felt that I had and I have still a lot to offer. And I felt that the best way to provide a steady education is to establish my roots, so to speak, and establish an institution, a school, where the teachings can be cumulative and progressive. So I decided to come home and set up a school here in order to have a more comprehensive education system in yoga.
So the vision for resource yoga actually happened while you were away and teaching.
Exactly.
And was there sort of a pivotal aha moment that really led to that vision of you opening a private clinic and a yoga therapy school?
I'd have to say that there were many little aha moments, more than one big one. Mm-hmm. The first one, I'd have to say, was even before I decided to open the school. It was the aha moment that made me realize that yoga was therapeutic. And it was thanks to my teacher at the time who mentioned the word cellular respiration mm-hmm. while we were in a downward dog. I remember the moment. I was in a downward dog and she said cellular respiration. And all of a sudden, I saw my textbook. And I realized, oh, this is providing part of these prerequisites that I was looking for at McGill. Oh, yoga is providing the cellular respiration necessary. And then that opened up the first aha moment, or this moment of union, which yoga is, between what I had studied in academics and what I was practicing in yoga.
So you saw it come alive outside of the textbook and on the mat.
Exactly, in my body, in that moment.
Very cool. That was the point where you sort of thought, I could marry what it is that I was learning in school to what it is that I'm doing through teaching yoga. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And then at what point were you like, I need to build a school around this?
Well, in the chronology of things, I wasn't ready to open a school right at the beginning. I just wanted to come home, as I had mentioned before, in order to provide a more comprehensive method of teaching. And so, for example, as a contrast to most yoga studios that have drop-in classes, I didn't promote drop-in classes. I promoted series. And so you would sign up for an 8-week series or a 3-month series, very similar to the academic structure of McGill, where you sign up for a class and you take that class. And there's a beginning and an end to what we're learning in that curriculum. And so I set up my teaching in a very similar fashion with the academia influence of having a set curriculum where I wanted to teach people specific aspects. And in that process of creating a series and then a workshop and then more extensive workshops, it had a very organic growth where I felt that the series weren't long enough and the workshops weren't. I always felt like I wanted to teach more. And so from that and from the demand of the students, I started my first training. And then the training led me to establishing the school itself and the curriculum that is set up today.
This spawns off a lot of different discussion topics that I want to hit on with you today. One of which being the difference between being a yoga instructor and a yoga teacher. And I know that your approach is very much focused, like you said, around education. And you've set up these series, these workshops, to make sure that you're really giving people a holistic and complete approach to what it is that they're learning on the mat. Can you explain to our listeners how you define the role of a yoga teacher as separate to a yoga instructor?
So yoga teachers and yoga instructors each have their role. And a lot of the time there's an overlapping role, which is to facilitate the practice and the philosophy of yoga. One of my favorite sayings or quotes is you can give a man a fish and feed him in a day, or teach a man to fish and feed him for life. And throughout my years of teaching, I realized both of those are really helpful. If someone is starving, you're going to start off by giving him a fish. And then when he's well fed, he'll be ready to learn how to fish. And so there is a really good complement between teaching and instructing. And if we just look at the words themselves, the meaning of each of these words, teaching obviously is teaching a principle, a tool, a technique, something that will create a certain level of autonomy in the participant so that the person can understand and ideally apply what they're learning. They've learnt it. Okay. Whereas an instructor, as the name implies, is providing instructions. And we can look at an instruction manual, which creates a step-by-step process to meeting a specific action, objective, or in this case, pose, let's say, or exercise. And the step-by-step instruction is a fundamental aspect of teaching. And so the ideal, in my opinion, is that the instructor is also a teacher. The instruction is contained within the framework of a teaching.
Could you expand on that a little bit further? So if you take, for example, a drop-in yoga class, how would somebody who's taking someone through a yoga sequence turn that into a teaching?
Mm-hmm. Good question. A few different ways. I'd say either there's a certain theme throughout the class, and the theme is one of the yoga teachings or aspects, philosophies, or sutras. And then the instructions help us to develop and cultivate the benefits of that theme. That's one way. Another way is to understand what is the objective or what is the benefit of this sequence, of this posture. And in order to meet the benefits, I'm going to give you these instructions.
Do you think that it's necessary to be explicit in terms of what your intent is when working either one-on-one with the student or in a group class?
I think it depends on what your actual intention is as a teacher. Sometimes I take a yoga class and it feels like I'm playing Simon Says. And the teacher just tells me, do this, then do this, then do this, and then do that. And personally, that feels very empty. It doesn't feel inspiring to me. And I can imagine for people who have less yoga background and less body awareness, that it probably doesn't carry them very far in embodying and in integrating what yoga can provide for us. So I don't think it's necessary, to go back to your question, to explain the intention behind every single action, because then, you know, we'd get lost in detail sometime. I think it's important to have a certain framework in which we're exploring through these practices and instructions.
What that also makes me think of is in a private one-on-one setting with a student, if you are trying to teach them something, it's so important to meet them where they're at and make sure that you're speaking their language. Mm-hmm. What are some of the steps that you take to sort of assess and identify where a student is on the path and how you can meet them where they're at?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I think that's fundamental to the therapeutic portion of the yoga practice. Mm-hmm. So I would say there's two main ways. One is knowing what I call the universal principles, is what am I looking for in terms of a healthy body? What am I looking for example, in terms of breathing patterns, movement patterns, stress management symptoms, and all these things that are fundamental to a healthy organism? I know what I'm looking for, and I know how to read it in a certain body and a certain exercise, for example. And that would be what I call the universals, because a human organism is the same, whether it's yours or mine or someone who comes to me for a specific reason. Where we're unique, which brings me to the second point, is each person living in their human organism is unique. And your body is different than mine in that respect, and the person who's going to come to see me. And so what will help me to understand where this person is at is to establish at the beginning of the yoga therapy session. It's a one-on-one, and it begins with a dialogue. And this dialogue is really helpful because it helps me to understand what this person is coming in with, what their lexicon is. Can I use that word, lexicon?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So what their lexicon is, where they're at emotionally speaking, where they're at in terms of their frame of mind and their state of mind. And at the same time, it allows me to ask questions, provide insight, and suggest a certain theme, which will be then put to practice. And when I suggest the theme, it's always in relationship to what these universal principles of health are and where the easiest entry point is for this specific person that day based on what they're bringing onto their mat.
So can you give us an example of maybe things that you hear some of your clients or students say that indicate to you where they stand at this point and how you can move forward with them?
I think it's really contextual for it to make the most sense. Mm-hmm. Things that come to mind off the top are, for example, oh, I had no choice, and or I didn't have time to, or things that indicate either lack of awareness or lack of education in that specific field.
Okay, or things like, I'm always the type of person to...
Exactly.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not the type who...
So something that indicates a limiting belief of some sort.
Exactly.
And is that typically where you start with them?
I don't have a typical start, I have to say. It really depends on where the person is at. I know this is part of this question is to figure out where they're at. And if I go back to the example before of, you know, give a man a fish or teach a man to fish, if someone is very hungry and I'm trying to teach them how to fish, it'll be a frustrating experience. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them a fish and then I'll teach them. And so what that means, if I take it out of the analogy, is if someone comes to me, for example, for anxiety, then I know that anxiety is a symptom of the stress response, and I know that the stress response, by definition, is a defense mechanism. And so it's very possible that that person will be defensive, not even on purpose, just as a byproduct of the anxiety. And so sometimes approaching the source too soon could have the opposite effect. It could be more stressful for the person or more uncomfortable for the person, and that would limit the rhythm of the progress. And so a lot of the time what I'll do is I'll gather the information about this person and then, you know, do a general approach for the first day and give them, so to speak, homework so that we can develop deeper and further during the subsequent visits.
It really speaks to the fact that yoga and yoga teachers are taking in so much more than just taking our students through the different yoga postures. And it's looking at each individual for who they are and how yoga can benefit them. And that's not a definition that I held going through my first yoga teacher training and coming out of it. And it really gave me a lot more intention and a lot more purpose in pursuing a career, knowing that I was so much more than just somebody who is going to, like you said, play that Simon Says character and take you through a series of postures.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really empowering.
I agree.
Yeah. Was it a struggle for you to let go of pursuing a career path related to medicine and switch gears into yoga and yoga therapy?
It was an interesting time where I was still convinced about the medical model while practicing and teaching yoga. And I realized along the line that I was trying to medicalize yoga. And then I went to a symposium on yoga therapy and research, which is led mainly by MDs in the States. And I took the flight home with one of the people on the panel who was really upset at the end of the symposium. And she said, well, they're not dumbing medicine down for us. So why would we have to dumb down yoga for them? And that completely shifted my approach to yoga therapeutics and what I was trying to do. And so it feels like I started my career trying to medicalize yoga, and now I rather yogify the medical system.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And do you feel that people take to that? I know that a large portion of your clientele that you offer one-on-one yoga therapy sessions to are people who might not otherwise come to a yoga class or mm-hmm. step on a yoga mat. And mm-hmm. so do you think the fact that you're taking the approach of medicalizing yoga speaks to them even more? Do you think that's sort of what's drawing them in?
I definitely think it helps, because it helps to provide a certain common sense to the yoga practice, and it makes it relatable, approachable, and more close to something that they already know and trust.
Interesting. And what about the fact that it also seems to attract, like I said before, the yogis and the non-yogis? So on one end of the spectrum, you are making yoga accessible to beginner students and really relevant to an audience who might otherwise feel turned off by the idea of practicing yoga. And they're also seeking yoga as a means of therapy, which means that they have a very real problem or need and that they're willing to pay for a long-term solution. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you're serving a very highly engaged audience of yoga teachers and health professionals who are thirsty for this knowledge and ways to expand their skill set and develop professionally. So what is it, do you think, that speaks to the already engaged yoga teacher or yogi about your approach?
Mm-hmm. My main intention with opening the school, and why I opened a school and not a studio, is specifically to be complementary rather than a competition. And so both in the way that I structure the school and in the content that I deliver, it's theory and practice that will complement and deepen your already existing practice, whether that's a yoga practice or a lot of my clientele are sporty. They play hockey and tennis and competitive sports, and yoga can enhance what they already do and already know, rather than instead of, it's as well as. And so I think that's the overriding difference between my approach and most other yoga schools that you're going to practice at.
I think that's brilliant. And I think I've taken a lot of time to sort of take a step back and look at what it is that you've created. And what I think is so interesting and rare is that you're offering something of value to both these high value markets, the beginner student and the thirsty yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. And it seems to really work in your favor when it comes to client retention, because essentially you're offering a stepping stone to your clients at every point along their yoga journey,
exactly.
Still within the niche of yoga therapy. So even when I look at my own relationship with you, as an example, I attended one of your workshops at the Wonderlust Festival. I then started to attend your workshops at Resource in Montreal, just out of interest, started seeing you as a private client, and then signed up for your training. And so you've really managed to stay relevant along my entire journey. And I think that that's so fundamental to building a successful yoga business. And like I said, sort of targeting these two very high value markets. I just think that was so brilliant on your end, whether it was strategic or not. Mm-hmm. On that note, I'm curious to hear how many revenue streams you've secured for yourself by being a yoga therapist, yoga teacher, school owner. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. So my main revenue stream, as you've already mentioned, is the teacher training and my private clientele. That's what I do both in quantity and in quality is my most secure revenue stream. Mm-hmm. And alongside of that, and as a complement to that, I teach in a lot of different teacher trainings around, not just around Montreal, but around North America. And I teach the anatomy and physiology portion of their teacher trainings, which then inspires them to do continuing education with me. So it's both a revenue stream and great exposure at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apart from that, I also do a lot of retreats and festivals and special events. Mm-hmm. As well as through the school, we run workshops where we invite special guests and specialists in their field. So other people teach at the school, which is a passive income revenue stream.
Yeah.
And we also rent the space for different activities, both private or yoga or massage, and classes and workshops. People rent the space as well.
I love that. And I also think it's so wonderful that you have other bodywork specialists come in and teach within the school, because it keeps your students still under the Resource banner and mm-hmm. still very much connected to the school and connected to the community there. And I just think in the ebook that I wrote called The Four Pillars of a Thriving and Sustainable Yoga Career, I talk about one of the four pillars being expansion. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I think you've set up for yourself here, is different platforms for which you can share your message and also make revenue, whether it's passive or more active forms. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's brilliant and a really important way to build a thriving and sustainable career. So
thank you.
Kudos to you.
Thank you. Can I add something to that?
Yeah, for sure.
Whenever I make a business decision or whenever I make a decision according to Resource, it has to fit three different categories of criteria: academic, business, and spiritual. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important. If I'm going to say yes to an idea, then it makes sense academically, because above all, Resource is a school. And so if it doesn't make sense academically, there's no point in me doing it. That's number one. And then if it does make sense academically, am I going to make money or lose money or break even? And that's going to affect my decision. And then spiritually and personally, it has to align with my values, and it has to provide nourishment for my personal life. And so I like to keep the decision making as comprehensive as possible, so that I don't turn into a clinical business or an academic bankruptcy.
Right. So yeah. And I love that, because you're combining your core values into the business that you're setting up for yourself. It needs to support that. It needs to support your greater intention.
Yeah, that's really important, especially with the amount of hours that I work. If it doesn't align with my values, then it'll drain a lot more energy than if I believe in what I'm doing.
One of the things that I admire so much about you is your ability to set boundaries in both your personal and your professional life. And you've mentioned before practices like checking email only once a day, turning off your phone on a day off. I think a lot of people resist setting these types of boundaries for themselves because either they're afraid of disappointing others, they're afraid of missing out or depriving themselves of spontaneity or freedom in some way. Can you describe some of the boundaries that you've set for yourself and how they've contributed to maintaining balance and success in your life and your career?
So I'd say the first one that comes to mind is that time management is stress management is health management. And if I'm not managing my time and my stress in a balanced way, then I'm not providing a good role model or example for my clients or for my students. And so that's something that's really fundamental to understand is the way that I spend my time will tell my nervous system how to balance itself. And so great into my day, these breath breaks and these parameters of checking my emails only once a day or at specific landmarks, then I'll be a more embodied example of the practice and the philosophy that I'm teaching.
I love that. And I think it's so relevant. And in a nutshell, one of the reasons that I got into yoga as a career, because it was sort of an opportunity for me to continuously challenge myself to walk the talk mm-hmm. and practice what I preach. And that's a responsibility in and of itself. Do you ever struggle with things that you do off the mat that contradict your teaching in any way? Or are there ever any times that you fall off, off the wagon? And how do you get yourself back up and being the role model and the example of wellness that you teach your students to be?
I try my best to live according to my values, and decisions that I make during my day are as much as I can possibly practice conscious choices, I do. And if I feel like I'm quote unquote falling off, then I'm gonna do the same practice that I'm teaching my students, and I'll get onto my yoga mat or take a break or take a day off or something along those lines. As a general rule, I try to make my approach more encompassing than restrictive.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yep. So when I first started teaching yoga, and I'm still working on this, by the way, is the image of a yoga teacher and how a lot of people, when I first started teaching yoga, would say, "Oh, you're a yoga teacher? Are you vegetarian? Have you been to India?" And it would be the same set of questions. And I realized we all have this kind of stereotypical image of what a yoga teacher is. And even though at the time I would kind of scoff and laugh at, you know, these generic questions, I realized that I had, and I still have, a certain limiting definition of what a yoga teacher can and cannot do. And I'm still working on finding a definition of yoga that is true to the tradition and true to how I practice it at the same time. And we can look at yoga in the same way that we look at, for example, religion, where there is a set of laws and parameters that are set up for a specific spiritual connection. And a lot of the time, we'll get so caught up in the do's and the don'ts that we'll lose the spiritual connection. And so I'm very careful, both in the way I practice my religion and in the way I practice my yoga, to remember the essence and why these rules, laws, and parameters were set up to begin with, and how can I practice in a way that respects your tradition and respects my connection to the divine.
Yeah, and how do you think that that comes out in the way that you work with and approach your teaching?
I think that's what defines my teaching, and that's why you won't find the same sequence at Resource than you'll find in any other yoga school is because a lot of the time we get so caught up in perfecting our yoga practice that we constrict, tighten, and tense instead of open up and align.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Right.
We're about to enter my favorite part of the show, the 5-minute flow round. So what we'll do is I'm going to ask you a series of questions over the course of 5 minutes or less, and you'll answer to the best of your ability. Are you ready to flow?
Mm-hmm.
What non-yoga related book should every yoga teacher read and why?
Ooh. Jitterbug Perfume by Tom Robbins is the best anthology to living a fulfilled life.
At the start of your yoga journey, what held you back from being the successful yoga crush that you are today?
Nothing could hold me back.
Mm-hmm.
Driven, determined, inspired, all the way.
What is the best business advice that you ever received?
It takes a long time to build a reputation and not a long time to ruin it.
What personal habit contributes most to your success?
That I teach from experience, I practice everything I teach, and I never stop learning, updating, and refining.
What keeps you up at night?
Good music, good company.
And what is your personal mantra that keeps you grounded in times of doubt?
I am open to receive guidance.
Where did you get that one from, or did it just come to you?
I downloaded it from the infinite.
What 3 actions do you recommend that our listeners take today to implement what we've discussed in this podcast?
1, if you have time to check your phone, you have time to take 1 breath. So every time you check your phone, take a belly breath. That's 1. 2, take 5 minutes a day doing something you love. And 3, once a week, try something new.
And Karina, a yoga crush is an inspiring and innovative individual who has built a thriving, meaningful, and sustainable yoga career. Based on this definition, who is your ultimate yoga crush?
Elena Brower. She's the ultimate. She's one of the best yoga teachers, coolest people, and all-around amazing entrepreneurs and transmitters of this deep body of wisdom.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I am hoping that she will agree to come on the show at some point, because I'd love to expand on everything you just said about her. Have you had the ability to practice with her?
I have. I kind of follow her around. I'm an Elena Brower groupie.
Groupie, yeah. Join the club. So, Karina, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. Before we get ready to say goodbye, let our listeners know where they can go to connect with you.
You can visit my website at resourceyoga.com.
Okay. And I believe Resource is also on Facebook and Twitter. Is that correct?
It is.
Amazing.
Awesome.
For sure. Thanks so much, Karina.
Hey, take good care.
You too. There you have it. If you've gained something valuable from today's episode, pay it forward. Share this episode on Facebook, email it to a friend, tag us on Instagram at Yoga Crush, or best of all, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. You can also leave a rating and review, and this helps the podcast to get seen by more people. For show notes and links shared from today's episode, visit our website, yogacrush.co/podcast, and click on today's episode. It has been such a pleasure sharing this with you today. As always, from my heart to yours, namaste.